This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. To say that we live in challenging times in Malaysia is probably an understatement. COVID-19 has unfortunately taken more than 12,000 lives. We have also lived in some form of a lockdown for the last 18 months. The economy is in free fall and many are unemployed. In the midst of this, the political tussle reached its zenith when Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin resigned yesterday. But what follows and who will be the next Prime Minister? For answers, we turn to Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate with the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, and Jabba Sadiq, Editor-in-Chief of Malaysian Insight. Both, of course, are frequent guests on BFM and long-time commentators on Malaysian politics. Now, thank you for coming on this morning. Bridget, I want to start with you. Were you surprised by the turn of events over the weekend? And of course, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's subsequent resignation after he has resisted many calls to do so since the Sheraton movement in February last year. And he, of course, managed to dodge the many political bullets that came his way.
Good morning. My sense is that it was inevitable that he would have to be leaving. It's a question, the timing, of course, always is unknown. Even at the last minute, there were projections that he might actually stay on. And he is trying to offer, his government was trying to offer an alternative in that context. But my sense is that I think this was inevitable. And I think it actually leads to the fact that the situation is such that his tenure was over. It had been over for a long time. He should have left earlier in a meaningful way.
So, Jahaba, you know, I want to bring you into this conversation. What did he miscalculate? What were his missteps?
Well, I think the final one was the bipartisanship offer on Friday. And I think that wrote his fate, really. That sealed his fate. But, you know, As Prof. James Chin said to the Malaysian Insight, that his only achievement was being made Prime Minister. And since then, it has been downhill all the way, from handling of the pandemic, which was a slight success at the start, but that cost the economy a fair bit. And then the continuing series of flip-flops, both economically, handling the pandemic, and then politically too, because, you know, by October last year, you already knew that he was on shaky ground with UMNO threatening to pull out at many times, that he had to seek unsuccessfully seek a declaration of emergency. And when he finally got it in January, it just meant that he was, as Bridget said, delaying the inevitable.
Clearly kicking the can down the road. But I want to know what follows next, you know, because he remains the interim PM until a new PM is found. But maybe can help us understand what will happen in the next few days. What is this process to find the new Prime Minister of Malaysia, Bridget? Will it be a repeat of what we saw at the end of February when the Yang di-Pertuan Agong determines who commands the majority of the House?
So I think there are a few very important differences that so far. We can see, for example, the way that the king made Muhyiddin Yassin a caretaker PM. He used the word, although legally many people question that particular use of caretaker, but since the parliament is still in session. But the fact is that he's basically trying to assure that there's security and that there's a sense of stability as they make the process. And then what we've seen is that the meetings have already been called very quickly. And so leaders are coming in by this afternoon of the major parties to present their different sets of numbers. I don't expect, for example, we will see individuals be counting and SDs to the same degree be done in the same kind of dramatic process that we saw in February. Now, the question, however, is whether or not the opposition parties can actually get their majority and reach their negotiations effectively. I think the king has put tremendous pressure on the opposition actors to get their act together. And we'll see whether or not the different players will be intractable and not want to make compromises, because I think the king will need to know who can have the closest chance of reaching 111 in that context. I expect also it'll be something quickly. not something that as opposed to be drawn out.
So I'm just curious, does it mean that Parliament will not be the place where this will be resolved? Because after all, there was supposed to be a vote of confidence on September 7. Jahaba, do you think this is actually the right forum for it?
Well, I think the process, as Bridget was saying, is quite a repeat of last year. The difference is he's meeting major party leaders. He's not meeting and interviewing every MP as he did last year. I expect that they will come to a consensus very quickly and maybe hold a special sitting sometime next week to confirm the numbers and then carry on with Parliament on the 6th when the King gives a royal address, which is basically based on what any Prime Minister or the majority will write for him. So I think that's where the process is now. However, what's interesting this year is that some parties which were stronger last year are no longer that strong. UMNO does not have the same numbers they had last year. They are pretty much fractured. Bersatu has also split off a bit, with Perjuang on one side. So the parties which are still stronger are basically in the opposition, which is PKR and DAP. That has left all those smaller players like the guys who left PKR in very dire straits, really, because there is no trust and goodwill with them right now.
Okay, we will discuss the respective political parties in turn. But I want to focus actually on UMNO. There's probably a lot of horse trading that's happening now as we speak, or maybe in the case of Malaysia, that we call it durian trading. Now, Bridget, in your recent op-ed piece in Malaysia Kini, you highlight three contending groups. But like I say, let's start with UMNO, there is talk that, essentially we might have the same government, but just a change in leadership, and you call it PN 2.0. Do you think Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri is that new leader? Because we keep hearing his name again and again.
So in this particular configuration, there are two different leaders that were among the PN. The first is Ismail Sabri, and the second is Hishamuddin Hussein. These are the two actors, the individuals that become listed. And then they're able to basically cobble the numbers of the existing coalition plus the different actors. I think that, it is most likely, however, that the King will turn to alternatives, because keep in mind that the PN as a group lost its majority. And it's not that they only lost the majority. One has to keep in mind that it's public pressure that has really transformed the situation. This is an elite crisis, and elites have pulled out of the relationship with each other, but they have only been able to do it because of public pressure about the failing in terms of managing COVID-19 and the economy so far. So I think this is one group. The second group, of course, is Anwar Ibrahim and Pakatan Harapan. Pakatan Harapan, plus, depending on whether or not Warisan and others are part of it. This particular group has core numbers. They are saying that they also include the traditional opposition numbers. Whether or not that is actually true or not, and whether or not is not so clear, but so far no one has denied it. They are projecting that they're almost at 105 at this particular point. I think that's probably higher than it actually is, but that is one aspect of that. And then the third group is more driven by UMNO. UMNO, not the rebels who left, or we say the different groups within UMNO that chose to leave the PN coalition. These include Zahid Hamidi, as well as those, what I call the party protectors, people who feel that the PN was actually, and Muhyiddin was undermining the UMNO. And so we see a situation where in that group, it's Tunku Razali, in particular, who has been seen as their alternative, their candidate in that group.
Jahaba, I want to bring you into this conversation. What do you think UMNO's chances are, though? Especially Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri. Do you think he has a chance? Especially since you've got another camp, right, which is the Dato' Zahid Hamidi's camp, where he has about, 14, 15 MPs on his side?
Well, I think Ismail Sabri's chances are a bit dim right now, for the simple reason he had that infamous press conference at the City Hall Auditorium and basically thumbed his nose at his own party. He is being touted as a prime minister with Hamza Zainuddin as his deputy. And Hamza Zainuddin was the home minister that was trying to needle and coerce UMNO into a pliant position with Bersatu and the PN government. So I think Ismail Sabri does not have the blessings of his party to be the prime minister, unless he can offer a fair bit of concessions to the rump UMNO as it is.
So Jabar, who does within UMNO?
No one, actually, if you think about it. They are so fractured that they can only be a key component of any future government that includes them. I think you just got to bear in mind that it is UMNO in the last 18 months that has brought down two governments. You know, first was assisting Bersatu's Muhyiddin to bring down the PH government, and then on their own bringing down the PN government. So at this point in time, they are pretty good at bringing down governments but not building governments.
So, but with no leader proposed. Well, on the Breakfast Grill this morning, to dissect the political ramifications of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's resignation yesterday is Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate with the University of Nottingham, and Jabar Sadeh, Editor-in-Chief of Malaysian Insight. When we come back, what is the next move for Pakatan Harapan? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. And the hot seats today are Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate with the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, and Jabar Sadeh, Editor-in-Chief of Malaysia Insight. Just a moment ago, we were talking about UMNO and will the next Prime Minister come from this party? Now, I think we need to shift the conversation to Pakatan Harapan, the opposition. Bridget, you did highlight that they probably have a chance, but what do you think their real chances are like? Can they cobble a coalition, especially with Warisan?
So I think that as a core group, Pakatan Harapan remains relatively cohesive. They're all at least publicly backing Anwar Ibrahim, even though there are some within it that have their concerns. But I think at a more general level, they're united. The problem is that they don't have the numbers and secure support from those not in Pakatan Harapan. And this, of course, affects the coalition. So if they, for example, work with the court cluster in UMNO, or if they work with, former Bersatu, former PKR members who became Bersatu members, or if they work with Warisan or GPS, they have to make some sets of concessions. And many of those involve, questions about Anwar Ibrahim's leadership and whether or not they can work with Anwar as opposed to someone else, or whether or not they were actually, do think that this coalition can actually be representative and include different voices and work effectively. I think, Pakatan Harapan deals with its own legacy while it was in government, right, where it was also fractured. And those issues have not resolved themselves. And we can see that continuing to be a factor as they try to put a coalition together. And I think that if they choose to come in, they also seem to say, oh, they are the elected ones. Well, Pakatan Harapan might have been elected, but Anwar Ibrahim wasn't the person who was elected at that particular time. And so I think there is a real challenge that Pakatan Harapan faces in terms of being able to not only secure the majority, but also make sure that there is a situation when they come in office that there won't be this return to kind of racialized instability politics that also tore down the country in terms of the latter part of Pakatan Harapan's tenure.
Yeah, I think whoever becomes the Prime Minister of Malaysia will have a very challenging time ahead. But I want to, talk about Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. And actually, by my observation, he's been surprisingly very quiet, considering all that has happened. Maybe not a bad move, because, there were many cases over the last 19 months, 18 months, where he claimed he could form a government and nothing happened. But do you think now he has a serious chance, Jahaba?
He always has a serious chance. It's just that, it always falters at the end of it, unfortunately.
So can he get it to the finishing line this time, finally?
I think, as Bridget has pointed out, there are many issues around it. And the reality is the court cluster won't work with him because you can't have a government between them ahead of an election. Because, you know, their narrative, the UMNO narrative is they'll never work with Anwar or DAP. The DAP and Anwar narrative is they'll never work with kleptocrats. The Sarawakians have an issue too because they can't have an alliance now and then go into a state election and fight each other. Or, you know, there are fundamental issues like this which affects them on the ground 20 months down the line, you know. So they have to consider this and then figure out whether they can support Anwar Ibrahim. And maybe that's why he's quiet, because he's finally waking up to the fact that he has to do deals with all these groups very quietly rather than brashly announcing that he has a strong, formidable, convincing numbers, which at this point in time is just the COVID numbers, really.
But if, I mean, this is a question of hard maths, right? Because the magic number is 111. But if they don't, kind of get together with the court clusters, then the maths essentially don't add up. So what kind of compromises do you think need to be made? And is it impossible to really see this happening, Bridget?
Well, I think nothing is impossible, but I think it's very difficult, as Jahaba has clearly stated. And I think that it's going to be dependent who in the 15 that they can work with. Some people who have court charges, for example, will not be acceptable in the coalition. And also, I think that what will be important is if the framing of any government that comes in is seen as focused on COVID and a short period of time. I think that this provides an opportunity for the parties to come together. The key challenge here is that will the parties sort of focus on the party's interest and the individual's interests within that regard, or will they sort of stop for a moment and put aside these types of issues and work for the country's interest and come together? And you know, what I keep saying is that it's not just about the individual who's in charge, but it's also about the team they put together that builds confidence to address the issues of COVID-19. The PN government wasn't adequately competent to manage the crisis. As a consequence, anyone else who comes in needs to have greater competency and more focused on the plans of what they're going to do. Now, what we've seen so far is everyone is focused on the political politicking in order to get those numbers. And then they're not necessarily kind of laying out what are they going to be the strategies ahead. This is why this process of politicking ideally needs to happen in a very short period of time. And I do understand that the negotiations are rather intense and outreach is being made. But in this context, compromises will have to be made, difficult compromises. And for the public, it'll be very challenging to see some people who were former enemies again together at working in a collaborative situation, which is ironically what happened with Sheraton Move and may happen in this regard. But there are also, among these different actors, better choices to make in that context of who should be working together than others. So, for example, if Pakatan Harapan relies exclusively on the court cluster, then you're going to have a situation where the court cluster will still have a lot of influence to be able to determine the Pakatan Harapan's viability in terms of being able to manage a majority vote over time. It's not just about one vote. It's about being able to sustain a period of time where there can be stability to put in plan a place. I think that despite UMNO's problems in terms of its leadership and others, I think that the focus last night on saying there will be a kind of war cabinet or kind of framing the situation as a temporary dynamic or as an interim period between now and elections is wise, because it provides a framework for cooperation that might be needed. But it also, in a sense, as applied earlier, it provides a situation where an alternative candidate might come in, which may be bringing in different sets of actors. There's definitely appeal to try to separate parts of Pakatan Harapan and have a compromise candidate that comes out of the press statements last night by Zahid Hamidi and UMNO.
Okay, we'll come back to this possible compromise candidate. But another name that has been bandied about is Datuk Sri Shafiq Abdul Warisan Head, but he just has 8 MPs. Do you think he's a dark horse as a potential prime minister candidate. Jahaba, what is your view on this?
Well, I think it's a great choice, really, to even consider him. When Dr. Mahathir became prime minister the last time, he only had 13 or 18 MPs with him. And then he, of course, expanded by bringing in a lot of UMNO frogs. So I think for Shafi Abdal, one, his experience, he was in UMNO. He's from Sabah, the Borneo state. That brings a different light to what's going on in the country. Probably a much more precise way of saying this is the time for them to take the limelight. His difficulty is basically to get Pakatan Harapan to agree to it, one. And two, whether he can convince GPS that, you know, he represents the greater interest of Borneo. And at this point in time, before the king meets them at 2 o'clock, anything can happen, right?
Yeah, the other party that we haven't really talked much about is, of course, DAP, the party with the most seats, actually 42. Now, shortly after the olive branch Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin offered on Friday, there were mixed messages. What do you think the party is really thinking, actually, at the moment, Bridget?
Well, I think the party is divided, right? There are some that really want to focus on trying to work with anyone as possible to get the country out of crisis. And there are others that are more concerned about the party's political base and also kind of keeping to the principles of the party in terms of how it was elected. And we can see those two things at odds. We saw in how some of its members responded to what happened in terms of the issues of the offers that were made to the opposition on Friday. And I think that, you know, the DAP wants a stable government, but they also want a government where they are pivotal in terms of having influence and trying to have some of the agendas of some of the reforms in office and carried out. So I think we can see those tensions being played out within the party itself. Because they hold the largest numbers, they're critical for any government. But at the same juncture, they're also part of the polarization that exists within Malaysia. And so many of them will have, many parties, PAS, UMNO, for example, will have problems being able to work with them in terms of their political base and vice versa. So I see a situation where it is likely that DAP, at this point, is exploring multiple sets of options, but at the same time, publicly speaking and behind Anwar Ibrahim.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, a special extended one, we are speaking to Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate with the University of Nottingham Asia, and Jahaba Sadeq, Editor-in-Chief of Malaysia Insight. When we come back from the 8:30 a.m. News Bulletin, the legacy of Malaysia's shortest-serving Prime Minister. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to a special extended Breakfast Grill where in the hot seats this morning are Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate with the University of Nottingham, and Jahaba Sadeq, Editor-in-Chief of Malaysia Insight. Now, just before the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, we were discussing Pakatan Harapan's chances of forming the next government. Now, Jahaba, very quickly, you said that Shafi Abdal might make a good prime minister candidate. But we also hear from commentators that say that Anwar and Shafi won't be able to work together. Do you see that happening? Do you see a fight actually brewing in Pakatan Harapan?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, the reality is that the first PH government had 22 months in power. The first PN government had 17 months in power. We have about 21 months left. This is the time for all parties to get together, if you follow the UMNO suggestion of a war cabinet, and make it their final audition before the next elections. You know, I mean, for example, Khairi Jamaluddin was vaccination minister, and it was basically his audition for a greater leadership role in the future. So any government coming in now on a unity basis would use it to, you know, to present the best side of them, their policies, individually and as parties, and present to the Malaysian people what they're capable of ahead of the 15th general election. So I don't see that there will be a bust up of any sort. that the king is meeting all of them at once tells you that this is the general direction that things are going to go.
Yeah, so let's explore a little bit about this unity or compromise government. And of course, a name that has been touted is Tan Sri Tunku Razali from UMNO to be the PM till the next general elections are due. Bridget, how possible is this scenario?
It's also possible, but I think it's only possible if Pakatan Harapan is not able to reach those numbers themselves and to accommodate those differences among them. And in particular, they need those additional numbers to reach 111. And I think UMNO will hold back until it is actually clear that they have to either join or completely stay out. And I think this is where Pakatan Harapan will be looking to try to find alternative sources for those additional numbers within PN itself and obviously with GPS. And I think as Jahavar has pointed out, Shafi provides the best opportunity for GPS to join the coalition, but it becomes it is still quite challenging.
Yeah, and what do you think GPS will do, though, over the next few days, Jahaba? Because are they ultimately going to be one of the kingmakers in this political quagmire?
Well, yeah, of course they are one of the kingmakers, but they've been a bit quiet since the fall of the PN government. So I think they're considering the options at this point in time, as they should. Their reality is this. Any delay in their own state elections actually weakens them because they'll have more Sarawakians at home, unable to work in Singapore or in Peninsula, using social media with festering grievances about job loss, about money, about vaccination, which, of course, the Sarawak government is doing very well at. But, you know, it will come to a point in time they'll say, you know, why are we still being led by very old men to consider our future? And that's Malaysia's reality. When we discuss the options are in front of us, we still go back, as I was telling a colleague of mine, aging rock stars. You know, I think we need new pop stars. We can't rely on people who first came on board in the 1980s. You know, it's a sad indictment of our country that we still rely on very old people.
Yeah, that is very true, though. But I think we should review Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's legacy, albeit a very short one, because he was only served as Prime Minister for 17 months. How do you think history will judge him, Bridget? Let's start with you.
Well, I think it is pretty clear that his tenure is short because he hasn't performed. And I think when we look at the legacy, there are sort of four things that come out. The first is that his tenure has exposed many of the challenges of the elite itself, the focus on money, the focus on positions, the kind of the capacity of different individuals. And it's opened up the government to be seen as comprised of different parts of the bureaucracy and the politicians. People see the government very differently. We also see the issue of the need for competent leadership. You know, this is a crisis. And of course, many people will look back and be a little bit nicer than people are at this point of time when people are so upset about what is happening. But I think, you know, it will look at crisis management. And in the beginning, he managed reasonably well. When it got tough, the government failed and was very complacent. And I think as a consequence, this issue of competency will come out and be a factor that people will be looking to future leaders as things move forward. And I think finally, the issue that we'll look at is the issue of inclusion. This was an all-Malay or touted as an all-Malay government, and it failed because it didn't reach out to all of Malaysians, to different communities. And I think the legacy and the lessons will be very interesting to see on these three different dimensions. But of course, what is clear from the speech yesterday is Muhyiddin Yassin has very disconnected from these areas. He still seems to think that he has massive support and is not cognizant of the realities on the ground. And I think the elites have been very much put exposed during this period of time. And they've been found in many ways wanting.
And Jahaba, though, I want to ask you, do you think this is the end of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's political career? Or is it too soon to write him off? Because after all, in Malaysia, nobody expected Tun M to be prime minister again in his 90s.
Well, it's quite strange you should mention Dr. Mahathir's name. I think Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin is one of Dr. Mahathir's best students. I think his 17 months basically is a mirror of Dr. Mahathir's first 22 years in power in many ways, of first of being inclusive. And then after being challenged internally, then he decides to crack down on people, starts rewarding any cronies and those who support him, and then finding that after a while it doesn't work. But of course, Dr. Mahathir's advantage was he actually had really good partners in MCA, MIC, and Gerakan 20 years ago. Muhyiddin does not have that, as Bridget pointed out. It became an exclusively Malay Muslim polity in charge of the country. And it just tells you that in the last, the last 3 years, we have shown that the first government, the PH government, was very much middle class, didn't quite work out for the rest of Malaysia. The second government was too much Malay Muslim, doesn't work out for the rest of the country, because the audience has changed, the electorate has changed. And as Bridget pointed out, he failed. That's why he's the shortest serving prime minister ever. Any prime minister coming on should take lessons from the last two governments realize that Malaysia is bigger than Kuala Lumpur, that is bigger than the halls of hotel ballrooms and such, that there are people out there who have very different ideas how the country should go forward. And that includes a lot of Malaysians between the ages of 18 and 30 years old. You have to include them in your conversations, in your discussions. Otherwise, they will throw you out the next chance they get, which will be in 21 months' time.
Yes, we've had lots of comments yesterday on the evening edition, actually, asking for younger leaders, especially women, to gain more prominence. So hopefully we will see that in the next few years. But the last question I have for y'all, and I want to put y'all in a bit of a spot. Bridget and Jaba, same question. Let's start with you, Bridget. Who do you think will really be the 9th Prime Minister of Malaysia? Who's your bet?
I don't like to bet when I know that I can't win. So I'm not dodging the answer, but I think that at this point it is most likely going to be it's Pakatan Harapan's to lose. Pakatan Harapan's plus to lose. And I think the sad thing is that they have lost themselves. They've lost it many times. But so today they have, if they can figure out themselves, I think they can actually manage it, in my view.
What about you, Jahaba?
Well, I have to agree with Bridget. You can't, it's for them to lose it. If I was to say it's Anwar Ibrahim, I'll be deluding myself. And I think a lot of people would too. And another point, but it's his actually to lose at this point in time. I'll say this. He's ahead in the horse race. It's the last lap, and the last lap starts at 2 p.m. And I don't know. We'll probably be like Vatican City. We will get white smoke or black smoke by Saturday, and then we'll know it. It's actually a religious experience that we're going through right now.
How true. On that note, thank you both for your time today. Today on the special Breakfast Grill was Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate with the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, and Jaba Sadeh, Editor-in-Chief of Malaysia Insight. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.